Coming up on All About Android, we're going to discuss the ad fraud and Cheetah Mobile story. Also, more phones, potentially, on Project Fi. The Muse 2 headband, is it going to make your meditation just a little bit better? We'll take a look at that. Portal from Facebook, Google's Pixel Slate, Samsung's upcoming deal, or so we think, with Niantic, your email, and a whole lot more. All About Android is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/android. And by DigitalOcean, the easiest cloud platform to deploy, manage, and scale applications. Over 150,000 businesses rely on DigitalOcean to remove infrastructure friction and deliver industry-leading price performance. Sign up today and receive a free $100 credit at do.co/twit. And by CuriosityStream, a subscription streaming service that offers over 2,000 documentaries and nonfiction titles from some of the world's best filmmakers, including exclusive originals. Visit CuriosityStream.com/twit and use code TWIT to get 1 month free. Hello and welcome to All About Android, episode 397, recorded on Tuesday, November 27th, 2018. We're your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Al.
And I'm Ron Richards.
And I'm Florence Ion.
Hey, yo! And we have not just three of us. We have a third in studio,
That's right.
A fourth person joining us. It's not very often that we get people here in the studio, mm-hmm. and I think this is the first time that you've joined in person with us. Russell Hawley, AndroidCentral.com.
Hi.
Hi, Russell.
Hey,
how are you?
I'm great.
It's fantastic to have you.
I got on an airplane at 6 o'clock this morning.
Nice.
East Coast time.
Oh, boy. you're doing the TWiT special.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're great.
That's right.
With air quotes.
As long as I just have to keep sitting upright.
All right.
Well, we have plenty of coffee in the other room if you need it.
So what is it? It's 5 o'clock ish in Pacific time.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah,
probably like 3 hours, Russell. The room will start going like pear shaped.
That's right.
It'll be fun.
Yep.
Yeah,
perfect. Because this show lasts for 3 hours,
yeah.
Russell.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
Sometimes four.
Just roll me out when it's over. It's fine. We'll be good.
If we don't get to the point to where you start hallucinating, then we have failed you, and I'm sorry. It's really great to get you out here. Like I said, AndroidCentral.com. And we've got some of your stuff in the dock that we're going to be talking about in the hardware block especially. And we've got a lot to talk about this week. Actually, it's a jam-packed show this week. So why waste any time? Victor, we've given you nothing to work with. So I'm curious to see what you come up with. It's time for the news.
It's a jam-packed Android news with extra perfume.
That's for you people watching the pre-show.
That's pre-show.
Yeah, that's a pre-show.
Pre-show
mention.
Deep cut.
I apologize. I put on too much perfume today. No, there, I said it.
You smell lovely. Like a little Moroccan oil with a little hipster patchouli thrown in there.
Patchouli is my jam. Let's be honest. Ad fraud. This is becoming a weekly thing where we talk about ad fraud.
I should be doing this. What am I doing? I should be making money off of this.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant reading this story.
No. I should be making money if this is easy.
Wait a minute.
What am I doing working for a living?
I don't want to wake up to a clickbaity expose headline from BuzzFeed about all of an Android host profiting from ad fraud.
We've been investigating for the last year. We've discovered that Florence Ion, host of All About Android.
Her answer, I live in California.
You do what you got to do when you live in California.
Anyway.
Ad fraud in the Play Store. Rearing its ugly head once again, this time involving 2 billion downloads of 8 apps that you've no doubt heard of some of these before. Cheetah Mobile, which, by the way, is the fourth largest publisher in the Play Store, as well as the Apple App Store, after such startups as Google, Facebook, and Apple itself, is responsible for 7 of the apps alone that BuzzFeed had investigated here. Clean Master. Like, at some point in our lives, we've all installed CleanMaster at one point, right?
I've never installed CleanMaster. I've never installed any of these.
Samsung phones. Well, exactly. Yeah. Pre-installed on Samsung phones. Samsung has a deal with CleanMaster for a part of it. Does that still exist, or that was...
They have kind of their own deal. It's like a whitelisted version of it that is part of it now. So it's not technically Cheetah Mobile's property, but I think it's their IP powering it.
Okay. All right. Well, CleanMaster, SecurityMaster, CM Launcher 3D, Kika Keyboard, Battery Doctor, CM Locker, a couple more. Kika is the eighth with the Kika Keyboard. 60 million monthly active users on that alone.
Mm.
Battery Doctor and CM Locker have been removed from the Play Store. So those two are now removed. I don't know the machinations of why those two were removed. Others were kept in, whatever. But I know that Google has removed a article that it posted in 2017 on Cheetah Mobile's improvements to its user ad experience and performance.
Wow.
So that happened today.
Wow.
Google's like, oh, we're not going to have that up anymore. That's a bad idea. But
but the internet never forgets.
Doesn't look good. In this case, the apps, the bad activity that was happening here is that the apps were tracking other apps that users who had installed these were installing onto their phones. And what that allowed them to do is to take credit, basically claim the bounty for referring the user of that app to this other app that they installed. Whether they actually pointed that user towards that app or not, they were able to intercept that and claim the bounty, from my understanding.
Yeah, that's basically what was happening. In being able to kind of, you know, forge that tracking cookie when it comes to certain kinds of apps being installed. And a lot of it ends up being, you know, just kind of like simple one-off games that people would install just to try out for the first time, or you know, things that would come through the Chrome Instant app store. You know, as soon as the install process happens there, it was able to kind of hijack that.
And when you're talking about, you know, an app like CleanMaster, just as one example, that's like the... That's the creme de la creme, like, pinnacle of most installed apps that we're talking about here. And there we're talking, like, what is it, in the billions of installs?
Yeah, it's a tremendous number. And a lot of it has to do with the, you know, the kind of verification, the validation that CleanMaster and Cheetah Mobile was given by being, you know, installed on by default on so many of these kind of high-end phones. And when they move to another phone, you know, your Android prompts you to say, hey, it's download this stuff that you've used before. So even people who weren't really thinking about it, by moving to another phone, they can just re-grab all of that stuff. And you know, so a lot of people have had it for years and may not even know it by name, just, you know, the thing that helps my phone go faster.
That thing that I installed a long time ago because I thought it made my phone go faster.
You don't need it.
Right. Well, that whole category of utility of apps of like, we will supercharge your phone. We'll give you better battery. We'll clean the junk away.
That's an old way of thinking about computers that has stayed with the smartphone wave.
It's people who grew up with Windows XP.
Exactly.
And they're like, I need more RAM.
Hey, I was there too. Yeah, I was also dismissing all the apps and all of that in the beginning. And then I saw the light. And I saw that this is not the way we're supposed to use phones. Phones are not supposed to require that much maintenance. And that's why I'm on a Chromebook now.
But, I mean, there's a little bit of education around that, right? Like, that is required. I know I fell for it at some point along the way. Like, mind you, this show has been around a very long time.
Oh, yeah.
And, we, you know, Android has gone through a lot of evolving over that time. But there was a time before where we are now, where right now Google does, you know, has created Android to really manage a lot of this stuff in the background anyways. And so apps like CleanMaster just have less reason to be there because Android at its core already does this in an automatic sense.
Which is the point.
There was a time where that wasn't known. If it was happening, that wasn't as, you know, as obvious to a user. So people would install these and they wouldn't know any better. And like you said, with every new device, hey, there it is again. Whether they're using it or not, it just gets automatically redownloaded.
You can walk into carrier stores right now, and these are the apps that get recommended by people who sell people phones. You know, well, if you're setting up your phone, make sure you install this thing.
Oh, you're having problems? Well, ma'am, here you go.
Make sure you have CleanMaster.
Just download, download this app on your Samsung phone. It's fine. And then I yell at my mother, "What are you doing? Always call me first."
Okay, so okay, there's five of us. There's the four of us here, and there's Victor. It's time to raise our hands if you've ever installed CleanMaster on a phone in your lifetime.
Wait, be honest. Wait a second.
Am I literally the only person that's ever done that?
Because I have reviewed phones with it already installed. It's now added to my account. And so when I've done backup, it's been,
Yeah. All right, so the way to test this is by going into the Google Play Store.
Because I downloaded everything with my account.
Either you have the install, like it's the you can tell if you've installed an app or not. It's either install or it shows something different. Like what does it say?
Which of the 14,000 phones?
Yeah, restore backup.
It goes from
installed. If you've installed the app, the button says installed.
Oh, I have installed it.
What does it say? Does it say install?
It says install.
Okay, so you've never installed it. There you go. That's the one.
All right, so I'm going to go there.
I have never installed it. It says install for me.
Dang, I have. Oh, I totally have.
You have installed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, not in a long time, but I have.
Victor.
No, I haven't. Mine says install also.
Oh, man. Right. Okay. Well, then I'm the only person.
Wow, Jason.
I am the 20%, at least in this
example. I might have installed CM File Manager, though.
Okay.
I'm going to check that one.
Yeah, I mean,
I love a good file manager.
I know. This is what we need. We need to create a website that you can go to that just has all these apps and whether you've ever installed it in the past.
Well, you got to keep in mind there was also a period of time where all of these things, Cheetah Mobile would name everything CM something, and that was during a period of time where CyanogenMod was really popular in the Android community.
Yep.
It was really
point.
Easy for people to look things up and be like, oh, these guys, like I had that conversation with people, the CyanogenMod made a file manager. Not what that means.
Not the same. Ron, in the back of the classroom, yes.
CM File Manager, I installed.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Guilty. See, now we're all susceptible to this.
Well, I think I mentioned Pika in a keyboard roundup like many years ago, so...
Yeah, what I'm checking now is did any of them make him into the arena?
That's what I'm checking too, dude. That's because somebody, cousin of John in the chat room, is saying battery doctor, but I don't see that in our arena search tool.
I don't see CM locker.
What comes up when you type in clean?
Nothing starting with CM is in it.
Clean. Thankfully, Clean Master was never taken to the arena.
This great new app that I found.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
I don't think any of these are in the arena.
All right,
excellent.
Well, that's good. I'd feel really bad if any of those ended up in the arena. I still kind of feel bad because I'm the only person here who ever installed.
Well, you have to try this stuff out. You have to know what's bad and what's good.
Thank you.
So my whole takeaway from this is that this is now two stories in a row. Yeah. And I believe last week when we talked about the other story, about the fraudulent one, which is the police rushing the Russian police arresting the hacker or the scammer. I believe after that story, we said, I bet you there's hundreds more of stories just like this.
Totally.
And a week later, here's another one.
Should we start counting them?
The question is, do we need a sign that says it has been X number of days since Android apps were found to be malicious?
Since an ad fraud story.
Yeah.
It's been however many days since a BuzzFeed ad fraud story.
Perhaps we should just ban them.
we'll need a drop for it and everything.
There we go.
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting story. I mean, Cheetah Mobile's publicly traded on the New York Stock Exchange.
Well,
by the way,
I did not know that. I'm actually a little sad to hear that.
Yeah, don't be sad. Don't get sad.
Don't get even. Vengeance.
I'm not publicly traded on the stock market.
You know what is publicly traded on the stock market? Google's Duplex.
No, yeah.
Not true, but Google is.
I'm sure someday Google Duplex will be making the phone calls for the stockbrokers to go high, go low, go high, or whatever they do at Wall Street. So Google Duplex is actually coming. I know I keep talking about the screen call feature, which is a branch of that particular technology. But now the beta has expanded to a very small number of Pixel users. Unfortunately, doesn't include me.
Doesn't include me. I tried. And
so that's a bummer. But if you happen to be one of the lucky few, you'll be allowed to book restaurant reservations in quote unquote select cities using Duplex.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. And VentureBeat, they ended up kind of posting a video. Actually, there is a video on the second article that I linked to that we should watch and listen to the audio from. It's from the perspective of Cafe Prague, who gets the call.
Yes.
It is really crazy how good this sounds.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds, it does such a good job.
Should we do it?
Yeah, go ahead. Once it's all queued up, we'll go ahead and listen to this, and you can kind of hear just how crazy it is. Doesn't sound like a duck, by the way.
Hello, Cafe Prague?
Hi, I'm going to make a reservation for a client. I've gone from Google, so the call may be recorded. Can I book a table for tomorrow, please?
Yes, at what time would you like to reserve?
At 7 p.m.
Does that have an accent?
How many people?
It not only has an accent, but the pitch is going up and down as like through words.
Okay, two people tomorrow. At 7
I love that phone is like destroyed.
I know.
It's just
yeah,
like this new technology coming through this
Anna,
destroyed
okay,
phone.
Okay.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
It sounds like the robot is even trying not to like interrupt her the same way that a person would. It's so.
Yeah. Is creepy
so
the right word?
It's not that it's creepy.
Creepy is the easy word.
Well, I
want to
say it's so well thought out. Like, clearly they got linguists on the line and were like, we need to make this sound as real as possible, have the same intonations. So you can try it out, maybe, possibly, if you're one of the lucky few. If you're in New York, Atlanta, Phoenix, and San Francisco. So it'll be piloting in those particular cities, and it's as easy as going, hey, G, make a restaurant reservation, or reserve a table in Hayes Valley, which is a neighborhood in San Francisco, or reserve a table at a particular place, and Google will do it for you. You can also ask it to look for, to request a table there, and the assistant will ask for the size of the party, date, time, your phone number. It'll give them your phone number, confirmation, and then it'll call after you give it all that info. With all that info. Yeah.
I will say that if this rolls out and it works and it's cool, this is like a selling point for the Pixel. I would get a Pixel.
I mean, I already think it's worth using just for the screen call. I don't have to deal with any spammers.
Absolutely. Call screening is a genuinely life-altering thing for me. Like, I don't get a ton of phone calls to begin with, but being able to look down at my phone and just be like, oh, okay. And just see like the transcript it's been really great.
But it's funny because a friend of mine has the Pixel 2 and got the call screening, and he's like, you know, it's more work now than just sacking the call.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, right. And we talked about that too. Like, where you've got to read through that. And it's like, he's like, just hit, don't answer. And then it's fine. Like, it's solving it's a solution for a problem that's way more involved than the solution we currently have.
I don't know. I think it just depends on the kind of calls you get. Like, for me, it's a lot like, you know, it's something that I can glance down at really quickly. And if it's like my kid's school, I can pick up right away. If it's anything else, I am happy to just let the robot handle it. But
Right. But yeah. So, but it's funny though, is that you know your kid's school's phone number. So you're going to answer that no matter what. So the other number is what would you normally do?
Oh, no.
Let it go to
voicemail? I'm not a very good father, if that's what you think, because I'm only going to answer if, like, I know it's my kid. If I'm, like, in the middle of a meeting or something, and it's, like, an administrator calling to be like, we need to talk to you about your son, you can leave a voicemail for that. But if my daughter's calling to be like, hey, Dad, I need this thing, then, yeah, I want to answer right away.
Yeah.
I use it as my robot secretary, and I feel like...
You just feel extra fancy.
I feel, like, awesome and cool. Like, look at me. I don't need a receptionist. I got a robot on my phone.
But what is the robot secretarying though? Like, what calls is it dealing with?
PR people call me.
Oh, okay.
PR people know I like to talk on the phone, so they call me, and I appreciate it. But I don't always want to talk to all of them.
Right.
Sorry.
So if you didn't answer, would they leave you a message with all the information that you actually needed and you get it at any point?
Yeah.
Instead of having to look at the screen and like wait for the
But then there's also the PR person that's like, hi, this is so-and-so. We talked about this on an email. And if I see that, my ears or my eyes automatically go, oh, that's somebody who probably has emailed me and I should probably pick it up. And then I'll pick it up and I'll automatically know it's somebody that I wanted to talk to.
What is that transfer like, by the way?
It is a little awkward. It is a little awkward because I pick up and then I say hello and there's kind of a pause because it's like the person doesn't know, is this real or is this the robot again? And so there's this,
it's like it's Brave New World, right? Like there's social rules that haven't been put in place for that yet.
It's very true.
Yeah. I think that's the kind of thing that just gets less awkward over time.
It's like emoji. Like, that's now right. We can just communicate with emoji. Like, if I'm serious. Like, if my friend is having a bad day, one emoji
will do
the job. It's way
more acceptable now.
Yes, it's way more acceptable versus before, where people would see an emoji like a K.
My doctor sent me an emoji two weeks ago. That was weird.
Yeah, but
oh, man. Was it like a syringe? And you're like, oh, no.
Doctors don't have time.
No, right. I
to
totally,
write you more than that.
I totally understood it. Like, when I saw it, I was like, oh, okay. Like, that's kind of funny.
Yeah. But, like, sometimes you just don't have time.
Yeah.
To get the point across.
But like a year ago, that never would have happened.
Yeah, no. But now it's like commonplace. Yeah. It's like...
Soon your doctor's going to be communicating to you with an animated GIF and...
I mean, that would actually make my day. That would be pretty great. Or just like memes if I don't show up to an appointment or something.
Oh, I don't know how I feel about memes anymore. I have a very mixed feeling about memes in this day and age. Ron, you got the next one.
Yeah, do you have mixed feelings about Project Fi?
No, I actually like it a lot.
Or how about broken embargoes?
Okay.
I think all of us in some form of journalism can appreciate when an outlet breaks an embargo. And BGR this time hinted at Project Fi opening up to Samsung, LG, Moto, OnePlus, and even iPhones.
Wow.
There was a post that went up. Yeah, there was a post that went up on BGR, and then it quickly went down. It did say that not all features would be available on some of those phones, and some speculation, perhaps it's the network hopping feature, who knows. But it sounds like maybe Project Fi might be coming to other phones. Interesting.
Yeah.
What do we think of that?
That would be a big deal, as long as the feature that doesn't get dropped is the network hopping feature, because that's kind of like one of the best features of Project Fi.
I feel like the only place that would end up happening is like the iPhone, right? Because the dialer thing isn't going to have control of like the network function on iOS, because it's going to be a little more locked down. But if it's coming to the other Android phones, there's not like special software on Project Fi Android phones that let that happen. It's just having access to the network controller.
Right.
So it should work the same way on a normal Samsung phone as it would on a Project Fi Pixel.
Yeah. And I guess there's also value there in kind of the international, you know, a lot of people traveling internationally love Project Fi. It simplifies things. Also kind of getting the money back at the end of the month and the paying structure. So
I think it would be super cool if they could figure out a way to make it so that when it did work on the iPhone, and this is something that could possibly pave the way for cool stuff on Android later, because this generation of iPhones have a physical SIM and an eSIM, to be able to have Project Fi live on the eSIM the same way it does on the Pixel.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see that kind of be a default for a lot of Android phones, to have that kind of eSIM physical SIM handoff and have Fi just be able to work on all of the eSIM things. I think that would be incredibly cool.
Yeah, I mean, good news for Project Fi too, because I mean, well, if it ends up happening, mind you, this was just something that was posted and then taken down. We have no official announcement from Google, so who knows? Maybe someone was just writing a creative story and it accidentally hit publish.
Wouldn't it be great if? Dear diary.
Just living in a pretend fantasy world. But good for Project Fi, because I think up until now, Project Fi has seemed like a great concept, and it's great for people who qualify. But there's that lack of broader support that really holds it back.
It just hadn't seemed like there was a lot of growth as a platform over the last year. So this is very cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there a Google fan fiction?
Well, there is now.
Probably. I wonder.
Yes, probably. I'm sure there is.
Probably all different types, yes.
As
probably.
The Samsung phone hiked up her skirt to show off her leg.
That's not quite where I was going.
No.
But here we are.
Strapping Pixel lad pulled over to give the Samsung phone a ride.
We got a voicemail, guy. We got a voicemail. How do I?
If you hit this button and this voicemail is Google fanfic, I'm not coming back.
It's floating different voices for all the roles.
That's right.
Speaking of Google fanfiction, we have a voicemail from Matt Coddington about Android Auto.
This is Matt from Louisville, Kentucky. And I wanted to comment about Android Auto, which you guys were talking about in the last episode. I'm one of those users who frequently uses Android Auto on my phone. I don't have an in-dash unit, so I simply take my phone and put it into a car mount that I have up near my rearview mirror. I even have a Google Assistant routine. I say, okay, G, start driving. And then my phone immediately rotates into landscape mode and Android Auto launches.
I like that.
I use it every single time that I'm driving, even if it's to places that I'm familiar with. It comes in handy because of the real-time traffic of having Google Maps running. Then it can help me avoid a traffic jam or an accident. And I can be listening to a podcast, usually a Twit episode. And then otherwise, this is really helpful, is when text messages come in, you simply tap the button, as you know, and you're able to listen to the message and reply hands-free, keeping your eyes on the road, and speak the message back. And I think it's just the greatest, safest way to operate a phone while in the car. So I just wanted to offer my perspective on that. I think that the more that you use Android Auto, the more that you find that it is just useful every single time that you're driving. And I think you should give it a try. Thanks. Love the show.
Thank you, Matt.
Cool. Well, I'm already a super fan of Android Auto, as you may all know. I use it every time I drive here.
And you use it on your phone.
I use it on my phone.
Yeah.
Also hiked up right underneath my rearview mirror. I have a sticky mount, and it goes right underneath my rearview mirror.
So it's like a magnetic thing, or
sticky. It's like the suction. It's a sticky suction.
Got it.
I used to have a magnet, but I have a short car, or a car that's low to the ground, so I didn't want to have the phone. So I was looking down. I was looking up towards the road. So that's why I put it up there. So then that way I can like see who's behind me while I'm changing lanes to, you know, make the next direction or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, all the things my dad taught me when he taught me how to drive.
Yeah.
And I love it. And, you know, I'm not upgrading my car. I'm probably going to keep it another 10 years.
Yeah. And Matt raised a really good point as far as being able to launch it with voice. It's kind of like the only thing that's missing from Android Auto is I will never not bring this up. One of my favorite features from the Motorola line was being able to launch car mode just when you started driving. Like, it just detected motion and launched.
Because Spotify knows when I'm driving. It knows. It will not let me scroll through there, which is smart.
Good for them.
You should
do it should,
that.
Yeah.
should not have
That's a good function.
No, it is. But I agree. I also think that the Google Assistant doesn't get called up very easily when you are driving. And if the phone is on silent, like, because I keep my phone on silent, it won't hear you unless it's on loud or you have directions on, which is really frustrating. Yeah. Because sometimes I do want to, like, write a text message or whatever, dictate a text message.
That is frustrating. Yes.
There's still kinks, you know. And if the phone has a lot going on in the background, Android Auto can also be very slow to answer. So the assistant will, like, stumble when it's reading a text message. It'll take forever to understand your command, which can get very frustrating when you're also trying to, like, pay attention on the road and navigate.
You're, like, trying to drive.
No, seriously, when you're trying to do, like, 5,000 things at once, you're reminded why you would want this particular ability to be built into the dash. Yeah. The idea would be it would have, like, better.
System.
Yeah, a dedicated set of, you know, components to run all that versus, like, my phone doing everything. Yeah.
And I know this is like a weird nitpicky thing, but there are a bunch of cars, I think Ford does this for a bunch of their cars that has Android Auto built in, where the USB port is actually tucked into the center console.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that you are physically putting your phone into the center console and closing it when you are driving. You know, so like Android Auto is still there. But your phone is out of the way. Physically difficult to get to your phone, and so I appreciate that for people who maybe lack the impulse control necessary to just be
I'm an impulsive shuffler. Like, I just do not have the patience, whatever it is with me. I've never been able to just, like, listen to a playlist as Spotify gives it to me. Mm-hmm. Because I'm always in a different mood. As the songs change, I'm like, you know what? I'm actually feeling like I want a little more like this than a little more like that. Which, you know, I wish it was easier to do with my voice so I could just, you know, be like, you know what, actually I was thinking maybe I'll listen to, like, Slipknot the whole way home. I haven't listened to Slipknot. It's just the first thing that came to my mind.
Stop yourself.
The first thing that came to my mind. I have not listened to that in decades. This is more about you
than the shuffling thing. Oh, my gosh.
Listen, high school was a dark time.
When we get back, we're going to talk more about Flo's obsession with Slipknot.
No, we're not, because that was
Flo's member of the Slipknot fan club.
Absolutely.
She's moved
not.
On from Samsung and into Slipknot.
Oh, man.
Just kidding. I love you, Flo.
I'm not that angry.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. You may be paying attention to interest rates right now. Of course, that's because they're rising. It can be a little anxiety. You know, you can feel a little anxiety around the unpredictability of what that means if you're actually wanting to buy a home. Do you jump now? Do you wait? Maybe things have come down. Who knows when the right time is? All those questions. Well, Quicken Loans, they're doing something about that. They're calling it the power buying process. And it's really straightforward, and it's great for you, the buyer. Step one, you answer a few simple questions, and they'll check your credit, of course, for pre-qualified approval. And the second step, Quicken Loans will verify your income, your assets, and your credit. It doesn't take long. It's less than 24 hours. That's going to give you a verified approval, which gives you the strength of a cash buyer so you can jump when you need to. Third step, once you are verified, you're going to qualify for their all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. And this is kind of where the magic comes in. First, they're going to lock up your rate. It's going to be locked in place for up to 90 days while you shop. And if rates happen to go up after that, during that, your rate is going to stay the same. So if the Fed raises the interest rates and you're locked in at a lower rate, that's not going to change within those 90 days. But if the rates happen to go down, your rate is going to drop with it. So either way, you win. It's awesome thinking from America's largest mortgage lender. So to get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/android. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And that's rocketmortgage.com/android. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of this show. And now we've got a lot to talk about in hardware, as we usually do. It all starts with a headband.
So who would like to be my guinea?
Let's do it.
All right.
All right. We're very used to seeing, or at least I'm very used to seeing Google Glass on pictures from the days of old. With you, Russell. Don't worry, I have them too. We are part of the Google Glass photo fan club.
I don't have Google Glass, but what I have used is the Muse headband, which is the second generation that Russell is trying on for us here today, the Muse 2.
Feels good.
Just came out a couple of weeks ago, and it is an upgrade to the first gen Muse band, which is kind of the same looking, but this one has new hardware in it that is supposed to make your meditation sessions more, how shall we say, productive. If meditation could be productive. I don't know if I should use those two words in the same cloud. So this one is interesting. Actually, Russell, if you don't mind taking them off, just very quickly, I'm going to show them on the little camera to show everybody some of the new bits here. If you don't mind if I move that out of the way. So here we have the Muse 2 headband. As you could see, it's got this copperish coil on the inside here. This needs to touch your skin so that it knows what's going on with you. And then over here, you see this little red dot. That is a heart rate monitor. So this thing has an accelerometer, a gyroscope, a heart rate monitor, a EEG... I forgot what that stands for. That's the one that tunes into your brain waves, and then it has a PPG monitor, which monitors your pulse. So
EEG is electroencephalogram.
Thank you. It's like the electrodes that they attach to your head when you're at the hospital.
Yes. Not an EKG, which is your heart, right?
Yes, and PPG is for your heart. So, but those are all inside of this thing. So
and PG is parental guidance.
And PG-13. Anyway, so this is $250, and you might be thinking, wow, that's a lot of money, but there's a lot of stuff that's crammed into this little headband. So the nice thing about Muse, the app in particular, is that it uses sound, like audio feedback, to kind of let you know how you're meditating. So if you are doing a meditation to, for instance, slow down your heart rate, you would do a heart meditation listening to a healing drum. And as your heartbeat was increasing, or as your heartbeat is increasing, you'll hear the drum increase in pace, and as you sort of calm down, your heart's not beating as quickly, you'll kind of hear it get a little mellow. So would you like to do a heart meditation?
Sure.
Okay. We're going to do it for 1 minute so that, you know, we're not just sitting here meditating dead air.
Is it okay if I play my didgeridoo?
Oh. Do you have it here with you?
Yeah, I never go anywhere without my didgeridoo.
Let me go get my bongos. Actually, what I would like to ask from you, Jason.
Oh, yes.
If you have an aux plug, chance? No. I should have asked for that before the show, but I didn't think about that.
It's okay.
It's fine. We're just going to turn this up really loud. Hopefully. Okay. Media's up really loud. Oh, we'll just mute Bixby. That was mean. Forever, that was mean. Yes. I'm sorry. All right, we're going to start. Okay, Russell needs to meditate.
Okay.
Serious.
All right.
All right, so right now it is checking your measurements to make sure that it can count all your measurements. So just breathe.
Sit.
Just breathe. And
take a deep breath.
You know, this will actually show us how Russell's breathing. He's breathing in and out. So right now it's checking the heart sensor. Okay, you're good.
I'm alive.
You are alive.
Now that you've had some experience with how the drum sound tracks your heartbeat.
Okay, sure. So I told you how it works. We're going to skip it. Is
yeah,
that okay?
That's fine.
Okay, now start meditating.
All right, now.
Jump into it.
Meditate.
Meditate better.
Faster. So Russell is sitting with his eyes closed. He's meditating.
He's doing pretty well. Yeah. Actually, so I'm going to put this up to the mic.
Mm-hmm. Now, Flo, explain what Russell is experiencing right now.
So it just kind of sounds like a little flickering of the fire, a very like easy drum beat. I think Russell is getting down to meditation town.
I think Russell knows what he's doing.
Oh, see, the audio goes up a little bit when we talk more about him. His heart rate is increasing as we mention his name.
So it gets louder as that happens? And it then just, it like pulls you back in?
Yeah.
Is that kind of the idea? Okay. All right.
It's really fun to do this when you're on coffee, by the way.
Oh, I'm sure.
And all right. Session complete.
Is complete. You are refreshed.
There's your gong.
Does it like score me? Do I get a
grade? Yes, it does actually.
What better way to meditate than to get torn down at the end of it?
Score.
You could have done better.
You could write an entry if you wanted. He's talking.
I got three birds.
I
don't know what that
Russell
means.
Russell did really well. I'm going to actually turn down the... Yes, this is when Flo was mentioning my name. So this... Oh my gosh. I don't know how to make him stop.
He's just going to keep on talking.
Well, it's a coach. It's supposed to help you. You're supposed to want to pay for this app.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yes, you'll be exploring how to use your mind, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. So, I'm sorry. I want to continue talking. This
volume,
is very, like, oh yeah, I could. The volume rocker doesn't work flow. Okay, so here is Russell's heartbeat. It was pretty consistent. So this is kind of where we started at the beginning. And there's just like nicely consistent. And you actually really chilled out at the end there, which makes me think that, you know, you started to tune us out.
I did a little bit.
You did. Okay, yeah. That's good.
I was trying. There was an actual effort
That's
there.
Great. That's awesome. Thank you for trying.
I'm super
so,
impressed.
I don't know what the birds are for.
So when you do a regular meditation with the Muse headband, usually your audio indicator is the way birds are tweeting. So when you're kind of stressing out in your brain and thinking out about too much, you'll hear a lot of birds going chirp, 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 chirp.
More birds is bad.
Yeah. So more birds conversing around you means that there's a lot of activity in your head.
Got
and
it.
The fewer birds that you have kind of fluttering around... So fewer birds is a good thing. And recoveries means how much you kind of like went off track and then kind of recovered yourself to go back to Zen.
Got it.
And you can add a journal entry if you want. And so we save it. And so this is me. We're all doing this on my profile. And so if we look at the meditation history, today I did a couple of meditations. And I actually did, this is the heart one that I did earlier. Flo needs to chill
out. You were excited.
So I'm just going to be honest here, everybody. I have anxiety. That's a thing that I deal with. And so I did want to try and see what is this like with an anxious heart. And as you can see, there were a lot of birds at the beginning. And then eventually I just started to think too much about my heartbeat. And that just kind of fell off at the end there. We also did this was a 3-minute meditation.
Okay.
So I had more chances to bring in the birds and the recoveries than you did in that 1 minute. And then this is a regular, it missed one of my things today. It didn't actually track the headband, which is a bummer. So you can use this app without the headband if you like, if you just want to try it out for the meditation. But of course, the headband has all the extra oomph. Also, if you wanted to do like a body meditation, you could use the Muse 2 and have the gyroscope see if you are like standing up tall enough, if you're kind of keeping balance. Oh, okay. So all these little things do come into play and are measured, which is why the band is $250. The idea that's that you're pretty, getting a lot pricey. Of, you're getting coaching. And when you think about meditation out there and how much it costs to like study under somebody, I'm sorry I used air quotes, but you know, gurus and things of the sort, there are good gurus just like there are bad gurus, and you never know sometimes what you're paying for. So maybe if you want to try out, you could get something like this, start it on your own, use the app and the coaching techniques, and then sort of take it from there. If you want to take it further, then maybe get yourself an instructor and pay for that. But you know, so far, I really like the first gen of this product. I like the second gen because it does more. It connects via Bluetooth. The battery life's really good. The only thing that's annoying is that it connects via micro USB.
Mm. Yes. Now, does it record locally? Like, could I do like a meditation with this and then sync to the app later? Or does the app have to be on in order to start?
I think the app has to be on. I actually haven't tried it without, okay. Because the idea is you would use this to...
Right, the
measure.
Guide is, there's value in the guide there. I understand that. But.
Oh, yeah. So goals require an internet connection. But I think you can do it offline without being connected to the internet. I didn't think to try it like that.
Sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I'm the reviewer. I didn't think about that. You know,
for all those times that you find yourself somewhere with just the headband and not your phone.
I actually...
Which, let's be real, that happens
all the time,
a lot.
Every time.
Yeah. I'm clearly a novice meditator, or I really require a lot on a piece of device. But.
You have a background, like you have experience meditating and you know, all the benefits that come from that. Does the Muse, in your opinion, provide extra benefit? Like, could you see yourself long-term being like, yes, I'm dedicated?
I use the first gen long-term. I like this one because I feel like it's a little more accurate because it has the heart rate monitor. And like I said, I'm an anxious person. So the fact that I get to really measure my heart rate and kind of get the brain waves going at the same time, that's kind of cool. To me, that's worth the money. And I thought it would be worth bringing it here to kind of show as like, this is an update. You can wear it two ways, front or back, like this.
Oh, okay, cool.
Depending on how you're meditating. I will say that if you have a lot of hair like me, it is kind of pain in the butt because you have to like really... really put this thing, like touch your skin, have it touch your skin. And if you have a lot of hair, it's
so
really
you got
hard.
Really get underneath the hair and kind of up against your
yeah,
hair.
I had a problem with that today. I had to like put my hair like all the way up. It's, you know, but like I said, I have had much better coaching from this than I have an instructor. And I think it's because this can read kind of what's going on in my brain. And I found it to be really accurate because I know when my mind is thinking too much. I know when I'm doing all those things. I'm conscious of them. And it's nice to have this little band kind of give you that feedback. I brought it on also just to kind of show that not all wellness products are like total bunk. You can spend money on something and get help from it. There's a reason, for instance, so many people love their Peloton where they talk about it so much. Sure. And that's why I like the Muse headband. And this is the second gen. And if you're thinking about helping a family member or a friend chill out a little more because life is stressful, maybe get them a coach. The first gen was also a good idea if you want to buy something, maybe spend a little less money and you don't know if the person's really going to get into meditation.
Mm-hmm. It's cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Muse 2 headband, and it was comfortable.
Yeah, it was great.
This one's actually lighter than the first gen. It's lighter and a little thinner.
It feels really similar to some of the bone conduction headphones that I wear.
Exactly.
As far as like the way that it fits on the head.
Yeah. Cool.
Exactly.
Muse 2 headband, $249. Awesome. So shifting from meditation to Facebook.
Because, you know, we're all totally unstressed.
That's why we need the headband.
It's all part of the same.
There's no anxiety at all when Facebook is involved.
So you actually did a review a little more than a week ago on Portal from Facebook. And it sounds like you'd like it.
I'll be perfectly honest. I didn't want to like this. Facebook and I don't have like the greatest relationship when it comes to anything.
To life.
And I'm not a big Facebook Messenger user. Like, I have one or two family members that I use it on, and that's pretty much it. But you know, the idea behind Portal, the video chat experience was kind of compelling because I like the idea of having kind of that smart display in the kitchen
to do stuff with while I'm cooking. That's like my de-stress thing at the end of the day is going and cooking for the family.
Yeah.
So like having a cool display in there to watch a show or, you know, video chat with a family member or something like that. Like that's always been a really cool thing. And I've never really been super excited by the stuff that has happened when it comes to video chat through Amazon Echo or through Google. Just because they're kind of flat cameras that don't really do a whole lot, and you know, the Lenovo Smart Display with Google Assistant mm-hmm. just does Duo, and I don't know anybody who uses Duo.
My mother-in-law uses Duo.
That's awesome. I can't call your mother-in-law.
Could if you wanted.
That's a weird conversation. but yeah. So you know, I found that the video chat function in this. Is incredible. You know, it's a wide angle. It's a fisheye lens on a 12 megapixel camera, and the software that's built in for the video chat is just unparalleled. Like, there's nothing else like it. The way that it does kind of facial tracking to move around the room with you and panning into different places. So I could walk around my entire kitchen and hold a conversation with my sister while I was cooking, and she couldn't hear the stuff that I was cooking because the active microphones were filtering that out over my voice.
Oh, wow.
Which was incredibly cool. And the camera was constantly fixated on me and was moving around with me as I was moving around the room, even though there are no physical parts to that camera. Like, it's entirely software driven, and it wasn't, you know, really jumpy. It was, you know, very smooth transitions as I'm walking around in my kitchen. So it was weird. I love that part of it. I wish that anything like that existed for Google Hangouts, which is something that I use every day. And I did most of my testing on the smaller version of the...
Yeah, this thing's huge.
Yeah, this thing is massive. It's definitely not designed for a kitchen.
Point out the privacy cap.
It does. Both versions of it come with a privacy cap to cover the camera and a physical shutter or a physical mute button for the microphones. There's a lot of very kind of privacy focused stuff. When you log into this thing, you have to manually give access to all of the individual features that get tossed onto it. And I will say the really cool thing about the big one is it rotates from landscape to portrait.
Okay.
And the way that it rotates from landscape to portrait is so incredibly mm-hmm. smooth. Ooh. Like, just the transition is very soft.
Even the hardware feels great. It has a nice, like, weightiness to it.
It's a genuinely well-designed product.
It really does feel nice. Yeah.
The speakers on them, it's a pair of 10-watt speakers, and they're not quite as good as the speakers on the second-generation Amazon Echo Show as far as audio quality. But they're definitely better than what you get from, like, the Google Home Hub.
Good enough to hear a person from across the room.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And good enough for streaming music. You have, you know, Pandora, Spotify, a bunch of these things are built in. It has its own voice command service called Portal. So you say, you know, hey, Portal, to get it to do stuff. But that only works for the very Facebook-specific things, like, you know, calling an individual person or you know, kind of looking for a specific picture. Everything else works through Amazon's Alexa service. Mm-hmm. But because it's not a proper Amazon Echo device, you're missing a bunch of the Echo features. So, like, streaming from Amazon Instant Video or, you know, using the Echo drop-in service to another Echo in your house. The new Skype feature that just rolled out to Amazon Echoes, none of that is available on this because they're all competing features to the stuff that Facebook is offering. So it's a little on the frustrating side. And that Food Network button is a liar because it does not give you any live Food Network stuff. It's just a couple of, like, you know, 5-minute recording things.
Ooh, pink salt. Like, I haven't heard about that before.
Yeah. Am I looking at Treat Yourself with Skylar?
Is she waxing with sugar?
Yes, that's exactly what
she's
doing.
What does that have to do with the Food Network?
Yeah,
nothing.
Really weird.
Wrong Don't like the network. Food Network
app. But it's sugar.
They could have done a lot
it's
more.
It's not food sugar network waxing.
App. Yeah, that's true.
It's for the Pop Sugar Network, not Food Network.
So yeah, it's. Yeah, I'm
say
really
from a hardware perspective, it feels really.
It
solid.
Feels. They both do. The smaller one feels more like an Echo Show because it's kind of a smaller kind of condensed unit. And so I'm really torn on this because the video chat service is by far the best of any video chat system that I think I've ever used. Even, like, expensive professional, across countries, you know, video chat services mm-hmm. Don't offer kind of the video Zoom quite as good as this one does. But it's, you know, it's still a Facebook product, and there's still some obvious privacy concerns about having a camera and a microphone that Facebook has access to in your house. And the Alexa integration is just kind of mediocre. So,
okay, but it has games.
Sorry.
I was just going to interrupt to say it has games.
It has a couple of games. And the video chat service has a bunch of the Facebook filters that are part of Facebook Messenger. So if you like that, then you have that here as well.
I'm a kitty cat.
Yeah.
Can we go back to the shot of the large portal that's there? Because we all know about Jason and the thumb ring, right? Like, Jason's not a small man.
No, this is a huge device.
This is enormous. Yeah. Like, I'm watching this, and I'm just like, this is crazy how big it is.
I honestly think that Facebook made this version to go in conference rooms. Like, not for houses.
Telepresence,
because this version is $350, and the other version is $200.
Yeah, let me use Facebook Messenger in a conference room, and I can also have, like, you know, my... like best friend call me.
Well, you just have to keep in mind that Facebook uses their own internal version of Facebook for everything. So like,
right? Yeah, no. My friends at work at Facebook, and they have to they eat their dog food. They have to use Messenger. They have to use everything for Facebook. To the point you had about a device that is powered by Facebook in your house. Listen, we all know like. I have verbal conversations, and then ads show up on my Instagram feed about the products that we mentioned. So, you know, we know that Instagram and the Facebook app are listening via our phones. Like it's undeniable now, and you have to believe that the same thing is going to happen with this device in your house. That you'll be talking about something in the kitchen, and then you'll go to Facebook or you go to Instagram. You'll see ads for that product. It's going to happen.
Captain J, would it hold my front door closed during a hurricane? Yes, it would probably help with that because it's got a bit of weight to it.
Yeah. Actually, well, yeah.
That's crazy. That's awesome.
Can you, Russell, do you know if you can log in with your like phone number? Because I did hear Leo mention that you could log in with just Facebook Messenger if you don't have an active Facebook account. But what if you just have like a phone number?
It didn't give me the option to a phone number, but it did. It did make it so that if you don't have a full Facebook account, then you can still use just Messenger to log in. But there are some security features for accessing like the photo feed and stuff like that that require you to access specific pages on Facebook. But that, again, if you don't have a full Facebook account, then that's probably not something you're going to want to use anyway. But very much like accessing Google Photos on Google Home Hub, if you have a full, if you manage photos on Facebook, if you upload photos and then put them in specific folders, it's really easy to say, I want this folder to be what goes into the rotation on the home screen of that thing. And it's a really nice digital photo frame where it rolls through and it'll pull your Facebook post associated with that image, you know, to you know, put as kind of information in the bottom corner of it as well. So if you
dig the Chromecast wallpaper,
exactly. If you dig the Facebook ecosystem, there's a lot to like there. I don't. So it was a little weird for me. But the video chat system is really incredible. It's something that it highlighted immediately just how immediately far behind Alexa and Google are in this particular avenue, which is weird. Considering how popular Hangouts has been for how long as a video conferencing platform.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that has to do with Google trying to be like, Hangouts is for enterprise. Remember, we're in the enterprise. Like, this other one is for everyone else. What
this
is
other one that
we don't
no
know?
One's using?
We don't know. We don't know.
Yeah.
And can I tell you, as somebody who has had conference calls with people at Google using Hangouts, it's annoying as heck.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Because it hasn't changed in 5 years.
No. It is, but you know what, guys? So. I'll take a Hangouts call at home in my PJs than I will a real conference any day.
It's a true story.
So Hangouts is slightly better than having to leave
your
home.
I get to stay, exactly.
Because it goes to a conference in person. Cool stuff. That's Portal. And then you were also, Android Central, Jerry Hildenbrand, friend of the show, posted a review of the Google Pixel Slate, and you were involved with this as well. I saw your reflection in the glass.
I drove to him in West Virginia and shot the video with him that he was doing of the Pixel Slate review, and I spent a bunch of time with it in the process and before. And it is a solid tablet, but it is really important to keep that distinction that it is a tablet. It is not in the way that Google sells it. It is not. A replacement in my mind for the Pixel books that are sitting here on the table, and that can be changed. But what it really comes down to is that Folio
attachment, mm-hmm. you know, that Google announced. The big thing behind that Folio attachment is that it slides up and down the back of the tablet really nicely so that you can adjust the angle, which is something that a lot of tablets that pretend to be laptops don't do very well. And this kind of excels in that avenue. But as a consequence, it's very deep. Because it's got a full keyboard with a trackpad and then that kind of extra space in the back for that foldy area. I couldn't comfortably have the Pixel Book sit on my lap to use. It hung off a little bit. And the same was true of everyone that I sat it down to, you know, to do that. So it was a really cool idea. I think the solution to that actually is the third-party keyboard that got announced with the Pixel Book. Or with the Pixel Slate, made by a company called Bridge, with a Y. Mm-hmm. They have kind of a hinged keyboard accessory that attaches to the bottom of the Pixel Slate and gives it a very Pixel Book look. And that, I think, is a much better solution for a lot of people instead of the accessory that Google makes officially for it. And that accessory is $200, the keyboard.
That's right, $200.
Yeah, the official keyboard accessory is $200, where that Bridge the bridge accessory, I think, is only $170 or $180. Yeah. $160, even better. So, yeah, I think that, you know, if you enjoy the Chrome OS experience, this is great. You know, performance-wise, it was really good. But
what configuration? Sorry.
This was the high-end configuration. The top configuration was the one that Jerry was using.
The Core i7?
The Core i...
Wow.
Yeah, he was using... And I mean, it wanted for nothing. Like, anything that we had it do, obviously, if it had stuttered with anything, there would be some pretty significant problems. But no, and the whole time Jerry was using it, he said that there was no issues with heat management or anything like that. Like, it, for as thin and light as it is really impressive. And the, you know, it's a little wider than the Pixel Slate because it kind of ditches that 3.2 design that the Pixel Book has in exchange for kind of a wider form factor. But the speakers that you get on either side are really nice. The design itself was really cool. It actually has two USB Type-C ports. Mm-hmm. Instead of just the one, which we see pretty commonly on things that Microsoft and Apple have made in that kind of competing space. So
buy an adapter.
That's right. Just everything can be solved.
Just add
with
on an adapter. Another $50. Yeah. No problem.
See, I think as a tablet, it's really great, but it has to be kind of taken as that. Like, this is a Chrome tablet, and that runs Android apps really well.
Yeah. You heard it here, folks. This is a Chrome tablet.
Right. But well, not... I would not... say right now that it's super great as a laptop replacement.
You know, it is super great as a laptop replacement.
Right.
I'm a little worried. I'm supposed to get mine tomorrow.
Wait, why are you worried?
Because my experience with Chrome on a tablet thus far has been super underwhelming. And if it's tablet first, I think you're probably right. It's not going to replace this. I was hoping that it would be my next.
I think,
and it sounds like from what you're saying, I can already tell.
Keyboard would probably get you way closer than with the Folio keyboard. I think it would be way closer to what you're using there. I will also say that Chrome OS, the software updates in the last month in particular have been very nice to.
Yeah,
Chrome tablets. Because there have been other Chrome tablets that have come out that have been significantly kind of lower quality in the market. Like, they were designed for a less expensive audience. Mm-hmm. And those have, Acer in particular makes one. And it has gotten way nicer to use over the last month with Chrome OS updates.
Good.
Specifically aimed at kind of touch environments.
Right. Yeah. The most recent update where, you know, the dock gets centered.
Yeah.
I mean, if you take the overhead shot real quick, Victor, you can kind of see the newer version of the Chrome OS update where you get it ends up feeling a little bit more touch.
Swipe up, Jason.
Focused.
What happens when you swipe up?
What does happen when you swipe?
And
actually,
a launcher.
Funny thing, that is that's what the launcher looks like on the Pixel.
Excuse me, a drawer. Book. It's a drawer
on the Pixel Slate. When it's not connected to the dock, the launcher is actually the full background, and you don't get a traditional Chrome background when it's in that tablet mode.
I guess that makes sense.
So when you, like, as soon as you snap it into the keyboard, you get exactly what you have here on a Pixel Book. But when you disconnect it, the launcher becomes the background.
This sounds like a kid learning how to ride a bike.
It's
this
a little
entire yeah. thing yeah. sounds like a kid figuring out, like, okay, like my training wheels, one is up. They're not yeah. exactly level. I can kind of do it, but not really. That's what this all sounds like to me.
And well, and that's what it feels like, especially if you've been using Chrome in tablet form for the last like 2 months, because hardware came out before software. But the really cool thing about Chrome OS and Chrome in general is that ridiculously rapid iteration cycle. They are just constantly pushing software updates right. to this thing so fast that, you know, the update cycle for like on a slow scale is 6 weeks, where they're just constantly pushing out new things. So even if it's a little on the uneasy side right now, I really feel like it's the kind of thing that's going to very quickly get better.
I like that Fingers you crossed. I like that you brought that up, because there was a discussion going around today about the slate and how it feels like, because Google is a web, you know, and a search company, or rather they deal with software, that software is always an iteration, but the hardware kind of comes out first, which leaves people kind of being like, okay, you're expecting me to spend how much for stuff that you guys are kind of still figuring the kinks out? And like, as right. Google users, we trust them. I mean, those of us here at the table and on Skype, we trust them because of the fact that we have this experience and we were not let down. But I'm just thinking about all the new users out there, like the people who go to Best Buy and see this on display and go, wait a minute, what? This is a tablet? What does it do? Why would I pick this over the Surface?
Yeah, people already have a hard time understanding why Chrome OS over other things. And I think that discussion has gotten easier.
Oh, you mean
easier.
My kid's school computer?
It's gotten easier
yeah.
In recent years. More people understand it. But it's still a consideration, especially a premium Chrome OS device. People still have a hard time understanding, well, why would you want to spend that much money for Chrome OS? I personally love having a premium Chrome OS experience with the Pixelbook.
Yeah.
And before it, you know, the why am I suddenly blanking on it? The other one. The one before the Pixelbook. Whatever it was called.
It's a great product, the other one.
Yes. It was the most amazing product. I love it. I can't remember the name. But the laptop that I use, Google's other Chrome
Pixelbook?
OS.
Pixelbook?
No, before the Pixelbook. It was the...
The Chromebook Pixel.
There we go.
They just keep moving the same words around.
Yeah, you got it. Like, you have to understand, right? Google changes their words every single week. So you get used to one thing and they change it the next week. But anyways.
The other thing, this is just really quick, kind of super nerdy thing, was the Pixel Slate had the beta for Linux apps
for Christini.
Yes, was already there and just worked.
And like I imagine Jerry was
very
just,
excited.
Just
yes,
all over it.
Yes, he was very excited. I didn't get to spend a ton of time with that, but as soon as you you tap the icon, you get full Linux terminal, you know, ready to kind of jump in and go. So if you are excited by that kind of thing, mm-hmm. it worked very well. I don't know how many Chrome OS users are going to be immediately excited by that, just because it is kind of a more complicated...
Developers.
Yeah, I think developers are going to love it. But, yeah. And it's something that I will end up spending more time with in the future. But
Yeah. Cool. So that's the Pixel Slate. Like I said, I should get mine tomorrow with the official case, which I can already tell you I'm not going to like. I mean, everything that I've seen about that thing reminds me of what I got when I got the Pixel C.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, cool. I'm super stoked to check it out. And it did not take me very long at all to realize, like, wow, that style of keyboard
is not
for me.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't like it. But I mean, Surface does it and they do it pretty well. Microsoft does it pretty well on the Surface.
Surface has done a really good job. And I think the big thing for the Surface is the way that this back hinge thing works, because it's not. Like, it's separate, mm-hmm. you know, the way that it's kind of detached from the keyboard.
The keyboard itself, yeah.
So it can, you know, kind of be used elsewhere.
Yeah, it's a cool design. I like
and
that.
I think this also works way better in smaller form factors. Like, I like the Surface Go size way better than I like the Surface Pro 6, because the Surface Pro 6 can also kind of hang off of your knees a little bit
right.
when you go to type on it.
It's too big to be manageable. Well, opposite of too big to be manageable is what Ron's going to talk about.
Oh, man. So you got to say that when it got announced, I think we all got a little excited. I finally was able to get my hands on the new Palm.
Oh, does
it's
it fit
so
in your palm?
Small.
It's
so small.
So not only does it fit in my palm, so here is the phone in my palm.
It's smaller than Ron's head.
Yes. I'm going to compare it to several things. This is compared to my OnePlus 7.
Goodness.
Okay, so there you go. This is compared to
OnePlus 6.
OnePlus 6, not OnePlus 7.
Whoa, you got the drive.
Time traveler.
This is compared to a pint glass.
There okay.
you go. Tell me you have a banana for scale.
I don't have a banana for skin. Compared to a box of tissues.
Okay.
Oh my God, it is small compared.
Compared to my television remote.
Wow. All right.
This thing is so small, it's almost comical, and it almost looks like one of those fake China phone, you know, the weird district of Chinese phones that was
a jelly phone.
That Brady Forrest would bring when he came to
visit. Through touring the streets of Shenzhen.
Yeah, exactly. Only when I hold it through force perspective does it look like the size of an actual phone that I would use. So I'm trying to line up the camera and that. But yeah, because I'm holding the phone very closely.
It makes your hands look enormous. So.
Exactly. It is actually tiny. This thing is honestly, no joke, amazing. It is... So it's 3.3 inches. It's a 720p display. It's running a 1.4 gigahertz Snapdragon 435 octa-core chip. It's got 3 gig of RAM, 32 gig of storage, has an 800 milliamp battery. Right? And it's got a 12 megapixel camera on the back and 8 megapixel camera on the front. And it's not running a limited version of Android. It's just straight up Android. And I can't even tell you what's more comical than watching me type on the keyboard with this little phone. But aside from the tiny, tiny keyboard, thing works great, and it works as a phone. I mean, it's amazing. So it's important to note that in the U.S., this is a companion phone. It's not even a phone. I met with the guys at Palm a couple of weeks ago, and they gave it to me. And they kept on correcting me. They're like, it's not a phone. It's a Palm. And it's the Palm device and all this sort of stuff. If you're on Verizon, what you can do is you can pair it as a second phone on your line. And the idea is that you keep your phone at home when you go out to dinner with your significant other, or if you go running, or you go play, you're playing basketball because Steph Curry is a investor. It's for life on the go, so you can still be connected. You still have access to all your apps, to your email, to text, to whatever you need. You just don't have to have the big clunky phone with you. What was interesting was I was like, yeah, but how does it work? Because I'm thinking like, is it tethered or what exactly does it do? And they said, no, you can leave. They said, I could leave my big phone in New York and fly to San Francisco with the Palm, and the Palm will work as a fully functioning phone across the country with my original phone still in New York. Isn't that crazy?
That's good. That's good because now you don't, if you want to go disconnect, you just have the basics with you.
You just bring the smaller internet with you.
Exactly. Just the small internet, not the full one.
So it was funny though, because as we all know, my significant other is not one of us. She is not a tech person. And I showed her this. And when we got over the size of it and I showed her, she goes, can this just be my regular phone? Which is a great question.
Did you then slap the phone out of her hand and say, no, it's a Palm?
it's a Palm. But I said, that's a great question, and maybe something we can ask the guys from Palm, because we're talking about having them come on the show in December. So stay tuned for that. And actually, I met with their marketing guy and their product guy, and product guy came from Pebble. So there's an interesting legacy there. I think the story of Palm is just beginning to be told, and it's not as jokey as we thought it was in like an amusingly small phone. It's actually pretty interesting what they're doing. So I'm excited to have them on the show. So hopefully we'll get that all set up and they'll join us in December. We'll hear more about it. But in the meantime, I've been playing with it on Wi-Fi because I'm on T-Mobile and my phone is not on Verizon. So I can't actually use it as an actual phone, but it works fully functional on Wi-Fi. And it's neat. I got to admit, it's neat. Just as a goof, as a test, I went a day with it in my pocket. As you know, like in my little, the little sub pocket in your jeans.
Yeah.
It fits in there perfectly.
Yeah.
And like I showed it to a couple of people at work, and everybody's like, that's really cool. It feels like a mini phone. It's, Gorilla Glass on the front and the back, titanium, kind of metal around the side. It just looks like you took a normal smartphone and shrunk it down to 3 inches, which is what they did.
Yeah.
So, fascinating.
It gives me little bits it reminds me of the jelly phone that I brought on.
Yeah.
However, yes.
Oh, I own
ago.
That phone.
The Unihertz jelly phone.
Yeah, it's in a pile of other cute small tech things that I've collected because I like to collect little things.
Yes.
I'm trying to find other things to compare it to. So here is my Asus 10-inch tablet, and here is the phone.
Oh, it's a baby.
Wow.
Piccolo. It's so like
Ron, does it fit in your mouth?
I'm not putting it in my mouth. Hello? Well, I'm not doing that on the show.
Okay. Post show. We won't record it, Ron.
That's fit in my mouth. Okay. There you go.
All right, cool.
So the palm device, the palm phone companion or whatever you want to call it. Stay tuned. We'll have more about it in December. But so far, I've been playing with it and having fun with it. So right pretty on. Cool.
Cool. Yeah. And that right. is hardware.
Yes. Let's pause and thank our next sponsor, because this episode of All About Android is brought to you by DigitalOcean. DigitalOcean provides the easiest cloud platform to deploy, manage, and scale applications with droplets, virtual machines that are scalable compute platform with add-on storage, security, and monitoring capabilities. When you use DigitalOcean, you can choose from standard or CPU-optimized droplets and customize from there. DigitalOcean is designed for developers. The easy-to-use control panel and API lets developers spend more time coding and less time managing the infrastructure. They've got industry-leading price-to-performance, and you can access the compute resources you need at the lowest rates, saving up to 55% compared to other cloud providers. And you'll always know what you'll pay per month with a flat pricing structure across all data center regions. And when you use DigitalOcean, included at that at no additional cost, you get 99.99% uptime SLA, cloud firewalls, monitoring and alerting, full DNS management, which don't underestimate the importance of DNS management. Trust me, I've been there. Full DNS management is important. You get access to their global data centers, enterprise SSDs, easy-to-use API, and you get to find out why over 150,000 businesses, including some of the world's fastest-growing startups, rely on DigitalOcean to remove infrastructure friction and deliver industry-leading price performance. And when me and my friends are working on a project, the first place we go is we set up DigitalOcean because it's so easy and you just get to work. You don't have to worry about all that infrastructure stuff. Just start building your app, build something amazing, let DigitalOcean take care of the rest. So sign up today and receive a free $100 credit at do.co/twit. That's do.co/twit for a free $100 credit. And we thank DigitalOcean for their support and just being awesome.
Thanks for being awesome. Speaking of awesome, apps are awesome, aren't they?
They're the best.
Aren't they the greatest?
They make our world go round.
Sorry. Oh, that's okay. I totally thought it was. But there we go. All right. I was lost in app bliss. For a moment, it's like I was wearing the Muse headband, and I was
scammed by app ads. So unfortunately, still can't find your device when it's hidden in the couch. But if you left it at the mall, you might be able to find it with the new Google Find My Device feature. It's getting support for indoor maps, so places like the Mall of America, which is huge. If you've ever been to the Mall of America, it's real big. IKEA, also a very big place. Home Depot, there's plenty of places you could lose your phone there. Macy's and Bloomingdale's. If you lose your phone in these places, you'll be able to find them down the line. I just want to figure out, how do I map my house so I know if I've left my phone in the couch cushions or between my bed pillows?
Yeah, it's a good point.
That's what I need help with, really.
Or if we have like a RoboVac that's already like mapping our home, have that sync up with Google, because you know Google needs more data about us. And
I would love it to know the exact dimensions of my house and all the rooms inside of it. That would be.
And then
I think my robot knows that, actually.
Yes.
Well, that's what I mean. Your robot is already mapping for its own purposes. Share that information over here, and then suddenly maybe they can help you locate your phone. I don't know.
And offer cleaning products for the corner that never gets cleaned.
I think this is actually a super cool first step towards the next generation of Wi-Fi chips that are supposed to act as kind of indoor GPS for like the next version of the 802.11 spec. It's something that we're going to see rolled out in football stadiums and stuff like that. So this is an incredible first step towards that. And it's really cool to see Google being proactive about it, because it's going to really change turn-by-turn navigation in buildings for a lot of different places, because it'll be able to give such, you know, highly accurate kind of location details. And it's something we're going to see kind of in the next year. So it's like, this is the first step. This is already very cool, but it's the first step towards something I think that is a great deal more important that we will see next year.
Right. Finding my phone when it falls on the couch.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Right. One day you will finally
get there. It's always on
silent.
You just need a sentient couch.
Oh, the couch would be amazing.
Do I want that?
Sign me up.
Flo, get off the couch. No.
You're not going anywhere.
An app to let you know how long you've been sitting on the couch today.
No, I don't.
That'd be great.
Yeah, I don't know if I want that.
Nope.
Did you know that I didn't realize this weather timeline. I think this was in the arena at some point. I have to imagine because it was the beacon of material design, you know, gone right. Weather timeline was apparently pulled from the Play Store 2 months ago. I missed this news, but apparently that happened a couple of months ago. There were rising costs of the weather API access, just to name a few reasons. So Sam Rustin, the developer, decided he would take the, was trying to figure out what he was going to do. Is he going to pull it? Is he going to take the app to a subscription-based model? And instead of upsetting people by pivoting to subscription-based, he just ended up pulling it entirely. So if you had it, you already had access to it. Well, if you didn't know this and you're like, well, I never downloaded it, but I want it and I can't get it now, it's back in the Play Store apparently with a new publisher, Acme Atronomatic. I think I'm saying that right.
Okay, Mystery Science Theater.
Acme Atronomatic. who also actually processes weather data on its own.
Oh,
it's kind of part of its business. So that
makes
sense. So the app lives on if you've been missing your weather timeline.
Hmm. So maybe Sam made some moolah.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. Especially if like your decision is, well, I guess I'm shutting it down. And then someone swoops along and says, hey, but I'll give you lots of cash instead of shutting it down.
Wait.
Great.
We want a weather app.
That's
we do the weather. We want an app.
That's a bonus.
That's how it works.
It's a good deal.
Yeah.
That's what you want.
Good for you, Sam.
And a reminder, Ron, back on episode 387, you brought Sam's follow-up app, Bouncer, to the arena and it won.
I did. I remember that. I remember it was a good win.
Yeah.
I remember that.
It was a good win.
Ron has a lot of wins. He knows.
Yeah. Well, you know who also has a lot of wins is game developer Niantic. And their latest win is to the tune of $40 million thanks to Samsung. Potentially, yep. So Samsung looks like it's going to invest $40 million on exclusive game development projects with Niantic, according to this report. The game will be a Harry Potter title that will utilize the S Pen as a magic wand. And it's unclear if this is the upcoming Harry Potter Wizards Unite title or all-new game, but I'd really have to hope that it's an all-new game and they're not frantically trying to build a title that's already been announced. It also includes Ingress, but Pokemon Go would not be included in the deal. And according to this report, the deal is expected to be announced in a few weeks, and games would be preloaded on Samsung phones. And I just find this incredibly interesting and ironic that a Google spun out company is now getting outside investment from Samsung to be exclusive on their phones. It's kind of funny how the world works.
How are all those iPhone using Harry Potter fans supposed to feel?
Yeah,
I doubt that they're going to care a whole lot. The way that these deals have worked in the past for Niantic, like when they had the deal with Motorola way back in the Ingress days, if you had a Motorola phone, then when you signed into Ingress for the first time, you got like a bundle of items that you could use in Ingress, and that was kind of like your deal. And so it would not surprise me to see a similar thing happen for Samsung phones based on that announcement. If you look at the Fortnite thing that rolled out with the Note 9, then you see kind of something similar there. It also... Ron, I really think that this the announcement for Harry Potter, I'm sure that is Wizards Unite. I doubt that that's an entire another game because that's not being released until at least spring of next year. So it's still pretty solidly in development, and a big part of that is going to be kind of casting spells and things like that. So waving it into the S Pen, I'm sure, will just be a slightly more immersive thing.
Magic wand!
Yeah. Oh my gosh, is this to sell notes to children?
Yes, no, notes to grown-ups. Are you kidding me? Harry Potter fans are you and I. Like, let's be perfectly honest.
Exactly.
Our kin.
Okay, but we're the ones who spend $1,000 on phones so that we can play Harry Potter. Like, that's exactly how that's going to go down.
Right.
If my kid tries to pick up my phone to play Harry Potter on my account, they're grounded. Like, that's...
That's how I'm going to be about Pokemon because I'm just not sharing that.
It
is kind of interesting that Pokemon Go is not involved in that. I guess that each one of the games that has their own deal has to be worked out separately.
Pokemon is so connected to the Nintendo world. You cannot separate it from that.
And is Pokemon Go still a big deal?
It's a huge deal.
Oh my gosh, it's an even bigger deal now with the new Switch game that just came out. Oh my gosh.
Oh, and so that ties in with the
directly.
Yeah, the Pokeball even works.
Yeah, that would do it. A bunch of stuff that you've caught in
the Pokemon Go world transfers over to the Switch.
From your phone to the Switch. Like, so, magic.
Wow.
Yeah. It's, you don't even need to live in the real world anymore. That's it. I'm here for it.
Disturbing.
Well then, all right. See, you learn something new every day. I did. I just didn't realize.
That's disturbing.
Because I see it actually being played here. Leo's still playing Pokemon Go, and I'm just kind of like, oh, for whatever reason, because I'm clueless on Pokemon, I'm like, oh, that's still a thing.
These monthly community events where they intentionally have people gather at like public parks and stuff like that. For like a special thing that they'll, a special, you know, version of a Pokemon that they'll make available. And we usually do it most of those months where we'll take the kids. And the two big parks near us never don't have 200 or 300
people. Oh my gosh.
When that event happens.
200 to 300.
They gather like potlucks where people just all show up and food. They will stay for like 4 and 5 hours and just walk around
and
play.
Sounds like church.
It's tailgating.
Oh my God,
it's tailgating.
Pokemon tailgating. Sounds way more fun to me. Sorry, I'm not
a football fan. It's a massive gathering of people every single month. So it's anytime I'm like, I wonder who's still playing this. And I show up to the
300
thing,
people.
Like, oh yeah. Still lots of people still playing
300
this.
People in the suburbs are definitely playing it.
Yep. Yeah. Wow. That's cool. All right. Well, we've got more apps to talk about in the arena, but before we go there, let's thank the sponsor of this episode. That's CuriosityStream, the world's first streaming service addressing your lifelong quest to learn, explore, and understand. It's a perfect service for that. It's founded by John Hendricks, actually, the founder of the Discovery Channel. It's truly cross-platform, all platforms, web app, Roku, Android, TV, Xbox One, smart TVs, iOS, Chromecast. I actually just got a TV, and it's one of the presets on the smart TV, the Samsung TV, Amazon Fire, Kindle, Apple TV, of course, available worldwide, so you're going to find it everywhere. And the content that you find on there, it spans all different categories, right? Science, nature, history, technology, tons of technology content, actually, society, lifestyle, and you're going to find award-winning documentaries, including Stephen Hawking's Favorite Places, The Hunt for Dark Matter, Cyber War, Birth of the Internet, and a whole lot more. I kind of went a little less. It's funny that you went to this one because this is what I was going to talk about, the Secret Life of Dogs. We got a dog a year ago, and I love dogs. I've always been a dog fan. You can kind of find out, like, understand kind of the language of dogs, aside from the fact that they're just adorable, and you watch it and you go, oh. So you can find that. Secret Life of Dogs is actually a BBC series, and there's both parts of it. So they have parts one and parts two, which are multiple episodes apiece. So if you like dogs, you know, you're going to find lots of dogs to watch here. Get unlimited access starting at just $2.99 a month. You're not paying very much for this. Check out their premium plan, which includes Ultra HD and 4K streaming as well. So go to curiositystream.com/twit, and you'll get unlimited access to the world's top documentaries and nonfiction series. And for our listeners, when you enter promo code TWIT, when you're prompted during the sign-up process, your membership is going to be completely free for the first month. So you get that first month to really check it out, watch as many of these documentaries as you want, and you won't want to stop it. That's curiositystream.com/twit and code TWIT for the first month completely free. And we thank CuriosityStream for their support. And now it's time for the guests to continue winning in the arena.
So many enter.
No pressure or anything.
This is where we are, Russell. The guests are running away with it this year.
I don't know about that. We might want to look at the results
before
we start saying that.
All right. twit.to/AAApoll396.
Ron still has a chance. Yes, don't rob Ron of his chance.
I should
you never
not,
know.
You never know.
You never know.
Ron's app last week is the winner.
Oh, boy.
Oh.
Unapp, right? That was yours. 33%.
Unapp, that was me. Yep.
Yep. So first place, Ron wins with 33% with Unapp. Second place, Backdrops. Well, I don't know if I expected that. That was mine. It's a wallpapers app, 27%. Third place, One-Handed Operation Plus and Navstar for Samsung Goodlock. That was our guest, 24%. And then fourth place, Verv. That's Flo's app.
I actually like the Verv app.
Verv. Yeah, it's a good app. This does not mean that they are bad apps. It just means
no one likes me. I get it. It's a popularity contest.
No, that's not true because no one likes me. So how can I keep winning? That said, our good friend Wade County is not in the chat room, so we don't have the results. But we know that Jason and Flo are already eliminated.
Yeah.
And we know that I came in first, which means I have 119 points now. And the guests have, I think, 136 or so. So I'm closing the gap. I'm getting there.
You're getting there.
Doing what I can.
Yes, you've got a month left, Ron. I can't believe that we've almost gone through another year, and especially with this new scoring mechanism. It's worked really well. All right, so Flo, you are up first.
Okay. All right. I'm doing this demo on my Chromebook.
Oh, okay.
Because that's how I originally used this app. So I want to make sure that I
have.
I want to make sure. What I can. For? I don't need. I just need, because look, it flips.
Okay.
So.
Oh, okay. It just works.
Okay, we're gonna do it this way. Because apparently, is this too big? Sorry, everyone.
Don't worry, I'm tall. Look at
it. My word.
I'm sorry. I should have mentioned this at the beginning of the show. Thank you.
All right.
All right. So, if you've been to my website, FlorenceIon.com, which is a website that I've been working very hard on. For the last several weeks, you've noticed that I have come up with, you know, my own designs. I didn't come up with those designs. I used an app because I am a one-woman show and I've got to do whatever I can to get the job done. And that means employing as many free apps as I can. So this free app is, what was my app called? It's called Hatchful.
Well, to be fair,
I always look for the icon when I use it on Chrome. I don't see the name of it. So that's why I didn't know the name.
No, and to be fair, when you go to the site, like it's hard to find the name. It's called Logo Maker Design and Create. It's by Shopify, but the app is actually called Hatchful, though you don't see it in the title. So all three of those things should get you there.
So I found this because Google knows me, you know, as it does, and it knew that I was what I was doing. And I was like, let us help you. So this really helped me a lot. So what you do is you start it off, and it's very very easily onboarded. Okay, let's pretend I'm starting a makeup brand. There is tech on here, but you can see that at FlorenceIon.com. So you go to health and okay, we're doing health and cosmetics. Okay, what kind of look would I like? I would like a bold look with a little friendliness added to it. Okay, those are kind of the color palettes it's going to choose for you. Then you come up with a business name. Now, I cheat when I use this, and I've been using this to make little titles for the different sections on my website because what I've been doing is downloading the end result and then Photoshopping it. Because that's what I've been doing. And so just come up with any name. Let's see. Jason.
Yes.
Cream shop.
Okay.
And you're selling face creams.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. I can do that.
All right. Yep. So Jason's going to sell face creams and we're going to have a slogan. Stay moisturized.
Ah, that's catchy.
All right.
That sounds like a slogan I would totally
stay
use on my face cream shop.
Okay, then we're going to click next. It's so, this thing is, my wrist is like about to collapse. This thing is so
it's
dense.
Collapsing at this point.
It's so dense. Okay, so now you can choose the logo usage, which you can't see on camera very well, but I'm going to read them out to you. So you can choose between an online store, advertisements, print and swag, business cards, large services, brick and mortar. I chose none of the above because I am just an indecisive person. And now there are different little designs that we can choose from based on the criteria that I gave it. So Jason's Cream Shop over here. Let's see. Jason's Cream Shop with a little chair. Oh, look at this cute one. It has a little like flower on it for Jason's Cream Shop. I like this one.
Do the mustache one.
We're going to do the mustache one. But you know what? I was thinking we don't have to do the mustache. So I'm going to go over the icons. And why are you doing this on this? Why? Do you want to torture me? Okay, I'm sorry,
okay,
everyone.
Okay.
So now we can choose from different icons
Nothing says cream shop like a Guy Fawkes mask.
There we go. Perfect.
Why are you doing this?
My Etsy shop is going to be awesome.
That's right.
Nice thing about it is if you don't like the colors, you can go into the different palettes that are offered and, you know, look basically based on color palette. So if you want warm or cool colors. And then when you hop in there, it'll give you all of the hex codes that you need. And so I took these hex codes, put them in a text edit file, and now I'm using them for everything I'm creating for my website from scratch. So I have the three colors for my website picked, and that's what I'm using. You could choose from different layouts if you want to just get like more creative, something a little different. And then when you're all finished, you just press the little floating action button and voila, here is Jason's Cream Shop. Here's what it looks like on Facebook. You can download the Facebook specific imagery for this. Here's what it looks like on Instagram. You could download this Instagram specific imagery for this. Here's what it looks like on Twitter, on Pinterest, on LinkedIn, on YouTube. If you are, by the way, I do have a little thing in the middle. This is a little Neko cat. It's not a part of anything. This is just a little app I have running in the background. I know everybody keeps, it makes me happy. When you're finished, you just hit download. It'll export your assets. It'll ask for your email. You do not have to use your email. You just go to other download options, and then you could save to your files. And then give it a name, blah, blah, blah. Save it. Okay, no more on my Chromebook. And then you have your assets in a nice little zip folder. And they come in PNGs. So they're very easily to manipulate, very easily manipulatable, whatever, malleable. And I just take them into Photoshop and then cut them up as I need for the layout I'm using on WordPress, a sponsor of Twit.
Nice.
So that's how I make my website. Now you know how the meat is made in the factory.
I'm going to sell so much face
all
cream.
All of the face cream. Yes. All of it.
If you decide you do want to go into business, give me a call.
All right.
I have an idea.
Oh. Well, now I'm intrigued. Does it have anything to do with face cream?
Because I'd be really bad at selling that, to be honest. This is the place to sell face cream to men. Okay. I'm just saying.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll talk. We've already done the hard work.
It's true. Yeah. We came up with the logo.
That is Hatchful Logo Maker by Shopify.
It's supposed to be for your Shopify account, but whatever. I used it for my own life.
Use it for whatever. All right, I'm going to show off an app. It's not going to take very long. It is a new app, so I think the install count on this is really, really low. It's called Go to Sleep, because we should all try and go to sleep and give ourselves this time we need to actually get fully rested. This is an app. It's open source. It's free, but you can pay to remove the ads and add a little bit of extra functionality for $1.49. And basically what it is it's an app that's specifically around helping kind of give you a nudge instead of not listening to what you really want to do, which is maybe, you know, I need to go to sleep earlier because I always wake up tired, and then you end up, you know, staying up all night and not listening to that voice, and then you're tired in the morning yet again. This is an app that's going to help you through that, right? You can see in my notifications, it'll give you, based on your settings, these notifications that appear to say, hey, it's time to head for bed. It's time to get ready. It should be on your radar. It's a half an hour before, or as we are right now, 2 minutes until bedtime. So it's saying, time to head to bed, because we know if you head to bed now, you're going to actually be getting into bed when you want to be getting into bed, instead of like just beginning your process and then it's 15 minutes later or however long it takes you. When it does switch over to bedtime, you hit that and, you know, your notifications should hit until tomorrow once my bedtime actually happens. And it's basically going to activate your do not disturb. But if you go into settings, there is the ability to have it automatically go to do not disturb, which is what I would actually want to do on this. Let's see here. Where is it? Go to sleep. Because it's nice for that switch. It's nice for that switch to happen. It cleans up your notifications for you, so you aren't distracted. You know, how many times are you like wandering in to go to bed and you plug your phone in and then you realize you've got like this row of notifications, and then it hijacks you and you're like, oh, well, I guess I should take a look at that. And oh, wow, that's on sale. Maybe I want to buy that. Where's my wallet? And oh, hey, that person just, you know, sent me a tweet. I need to reply. This that will automatically hide it from you. And then, yeah, you can kind of dial in your notifications, the interval between how often they're coming on onto your phone to give you that reminder. If you actually unlock things, it has a smart notifications feature, which will actually send you those notifications until you actually put your phone down. It knows that you're still using it. You're not getting anything past go to sleep. An automatic do not disturb timer So it'll be activated 2 minutes after the last notification is sent if you want a little bit of a delay. An inactivity timer where you have to be inactive for 5 minutes in order for the app to recognize that as inactivity for you. And you can name your notifications in a custom way. So if you want to put in some sort of smart reply, like, are you seriously still on your phone, or why are you still awake, that sort of stuff.
Some classics from Samuel L. Jackson.
You're going to regret this. You should be sleeping. All these things. You know, you find your motivation in everyone finds it in different places. So that's your ability to get creative. Anyways, it's a pretty straightforward app. It's called Go to Sleep. It is free with and open source, with the option to pay $1.49 to remove ads and have some of those
support
expanded. Swear we need a t-shirt says that. And it's just a cool, I like the design of it. It's pretty straightforward, and you should check it out. Get some better sleep. You'll feel better.
Look at a little sleeping moon.
Yeah. Go to sleep. There you go. See, it says time to sleep, time to head to bed. All right. Russell, you're up next.
Yeah. So mine is called Level Up Life, and I've got it here. This is kind of another activity tracker style application where it's, you know, you give it things that you've done throughout the day, and it turns it into a video game, because everything about my life has to be a video game. So I've got like my little character sheet over here where it gives me my experience and some like quirky little stats for, you know, strength and charisma and intelligence and things like that. And you earn things towards these based on the activity that you put into it. So you can go and create an achievement if you, you know, woke up without hitting snooze on your alarm clock. That's an achievement that will give you 1 to strength and 70 to your experience. Or if you go to bed super early, if you've had a decent meal instead of junk food, or if you've actually had, 5 portions of fruits or veggies throughout the day, you know, you can add these things. And when you select one, you can add kind of a separate note about it and add a photo for whatever that goes with it. And then you submit it, and it gives you the points. You're kind of on your own honor system. You can make up whatever you want. But everything that you submit goes into this kind of global community feed. So these are all people who have used the app and who have done things. And so you can actually interact with these people and leave them nice notes about things that they have done. If they are kind of major achievements in their life, this person spent the day with friends over Thanksgiving, which is a thing that you do at Thanksgiving, but, you know, good for them anyway. And so you can kind of be positive with them, and you can, you know, also take a look at your own feed of activities that you've gone through. I just thought this was a really cool way to kind of gather the things. It's not quite journaling, but it's a thing at the end of the day that I found is kind of relaxing to sit and be like, these are the things that I feel like are the major accomplishments of my day.
Reflection.
Absolutely. Yeah. To kind of go through and do that. There is also a donate remove ad section. There is kind of a small ad at the bottom that you can get rid of, should you pay for it. And you should, because it is an otherwise
support
free
your
ad.
Devs.
Support your devs. And you know, it had just a ton of things. You can create goals, in here for kind of long-term things that you want to add. And it ends up being kind of competitive if you've got, friends who are using it as well. And that is Level Up Life.
Level Up Life. Level.
That's right.
Actually, level on the listing.
And in the icon. App. But just the icon.
Just the icon. They felt they needed to get rid of the E's. Hey, the logo looks nice. Level Up Life. And check it out. And support your devs. All right, Ron. I have your app installed. I'll show it off while you talk about it.
I will admit a little bit of pressure now that I'm like on a run. Like I'm doing well. I'm chasing them.
Run.
And I'm getting a little more safety minded. And that's why this week's app is called Safe. And it's not a baseball app, but rather it is a phone. It is an app that will check your phone to see how safe it actually is. And SAFE stands for security. What is it? It was a security and something fairness for everyone. I forgot what it's called.
Security, something.
Yeah, security assessment framework for everyone. And what it will do, it will very quickly do a scan of your phone. And if you actually, Jason, if you go to the to the left, the far left icon. Sorry, you're getting a little ahead. Just to up top. There we go. Oh no, weird. Close the app and rerun it again for me. Sorry. So when you launch it, it gives you a straight off the back safe score. So right now your phone is 3.12 safe. So if you swipe up, you get a little summary of the various scores that you're getting. And it basically analyzes your phone based on four kind of areas: configuration, connection, applications, and operating system. So on the configuration score, you scored pretty low there with a 2.3, and that you have 6 secure configurations but 7 insecure ones. If you scroll down, your connection score is all right, 3.08, your application 3.53, but your OS score is 4.2. That's great. So what you can do is you can dive deeper to understand what those scores mean. So let's tap on your configuration score, and it's going to tell you that there's a bunch of things that make your phone that much more safe and secure. So, for example, you want screen lock turned on. You do. You want to encrypt your phone. You have it encrypted. They recommend turning this developer options off, but you haven't enabled. And these are just basically an easy visual way that even, you know, our parents and our, you know, cousins who don't know about phones can understand what these settings that they might not have any idea what they mean, that someone in the cell phone store might have done or somebody else might have done to their phone. And ultimately, they don't want to be insecure. So a lot of it is makes it very clear as to what you need to do in order to turn that on or off or whatnot. They give you exact instructions as to where you can find and where you can go and turn it off. So it's really, really interesting. The different paradigms that they're analyzing are all kind of the key areas that we all kind of, I feel like, we take for granted, whether it's your configuration or your connection or specific apps themselves. You know, if you go into the app section, and basically the connection is just like, you know, keep Bluetooth turned off, keep NFC turned off, that sort of thing. But if you go into any app, it will give an overview of the permissions, but it'll also give you a score on, let you know whether it's got data sensitivity and if it was installed from the Play Store or not, which, you know, if you're installing apps from other sources, you sometimes you don't know where those apps are coming from. You got to be safe, folks. So real simple, good way to keep your phone safe. If you have a loved one that has a phone that you're worried about them being exposed to things or not keeping their phone as safe as potentially they could be, you know, put safe on their phone and that lets them monitor it. So it's free in the Google Play Store. Support your devs. And yeah, that's it. So there you go. Safe.
Right on. I like it. I like it a lot. So the red denotes the insecure, yeah, and the green denotes that it's all
right. I like that it specifically tells you how to go and fix the things instead of trying to do it for you. Like, that's, I think that's an important thing.
Or just telling you what it is, right? And like, oh, you've got this, it's insecure, and that's it. Like, a lot of these apps I've seen before, just they stop at telling you what it is, at what the thing is, but it doesn't tell you, A, truly what the description is, and B, as they call it, remediation, how to change it, which is the key, the key thing. So, yep. I will like to report that my safe score, you can't see it, it might be too bright, but I have a 3.49, so I'm rolling pretty safe on my OnePlus 6. So safe. Get it in the Google Play Store. Protect your phone. Be safe.
3.12.
You live on the edge. That's fine.
Whatever, Ron. Whatever. All right. Cool. You cannot vote yet because I haven't hit publish. So give me a second. And then, Ron, give us a recap of the name of the apps.
So you've got Hatchful Logo Maker by Shopify from Flo. You've got Go to Sleep from Jason. Russell brought us Level Up Life in his attempt to gamify his life. And I brought you Safe.
That's right.
So four wonderful apps that you can vote for any minute now.
Oh, yeah. Right now, in fact.
twit.to/AAApoll397. That's twit.to/AAApoll397. And what is Victor going to vote for?
He's circling. Go to sleep.
He's going to use it for your children, aren't you?
I'm not saying I have a problem or anything, but
but you just found a solution.
Yep.
Didn't you? All right. Cool. Thank you, Victor. I appreciate it. I'll pay you after the show. twit.to/AAApoll397. Place your vote. We'll check in on it next week. And that is all for this week. We've reached the end of this episode, somewhat longer episode.
This maybe, is a song that never ends.
That's right. Why don't we just keep it? I think we promised at the beginning of the show that we would go like 3 or 4 hours or something. We've only hit like an hour and a half.
We nearly did. Yeah, there it is.
We nearly did. Russell, Always a pleasure getting you on.
This is
awesome.
And
even better to get you in studio.
Yeah,
thank
absolutely.
You for making the trek out early just so you could come on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is great.
Yeah, so where do you want people to follow all the work you're doing online? You're posting on Android Central, of course.
Yeah, best place to find my Android stuff is Android Central. I'm also at Russell Holly on Twitter.
All right. Right on. Thank you again, sir. Flo, what's new with you?
What's new with me?
Other than your website, that's all beautiful. At
totally
this point,
custom artwork.
Totally done. And custom.
100%.
So custom. I did not use an app to do any of it. just to be fair, I do code my own CSS. Thank you very much. Actually, you can go to florencesonia.com and I'm answering your questions, your tech questions. You just go up to submit a question, send me an email. I answer them for you. It's holiday shopping season. I know you have questions out there. Send them to me. I will answer them and they will appear at florencesonia.com. And of course, you can find me here and on various other podcasts around the internet.
Yes, and you should. Thank you, Flo. And how about you, Ron?
I'm just reacting to Burke in the chat room being very demanding.
He's
just... I was just like, wow, but all of a sudden Burke just really got perky on that. So go to Twitter and Instagram. I am RonXO there, and you can see various we're almost at December. I'll probably be posting on Twitter a lot about my favorite holiday music, so be sure to check that out. And if you're looking for another podcast, you can go to finalepodcast.com, where my latest podcast I've been working on. We just did the OC.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait to hear.
Which is the that's the podcast that's last week, Flo. If you remember, I was teasing that for you that it would be a show that you would appreciate.
Yes, but you didn't. But see, here's the thing: is the end of the OC is not as good as just the end of season two.
No, I agreed. In fact, we talk about this is not it's
I can't
not a very
wait to
good
listen.
Ending. Although I will spoil, they do not one, not two, but three finale tropes in the end of the episode. So listen to hear more about that, to hear about the tropes that the OC uses. So go to finalepodcast.com. Please subscribe. We thank everybody who listens to it. I appreciate it. So
right on. Awesome stuff. And thank you, Victor. Thank you for pushing the buttons. Thank you for being involved. And
thank you
most importantly, thank
buttons.
You for voting for my app.
No problem.
All right, good. I knew I could count on you. You can find me all over Twit, basically. I do shows here. And I'm going to be doing shows all week. I've got a jam-packed couple of weeks, actually. So
He's here all week.
Got a lot of his face to look forward to, apparently.
Don't forget to tip your waitress.
But that is it for this week. Leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. Send us email at AAA@twit.tv. Find us on Twitter. We are at Android Show. We have an arena apps list. If you want to find all the apps that we've ever covered in the arena, it keeps up to date. And we really appreciate the people that do that. Go to twit.to/AndroidApps, and you'll find everything that we've had in the arena. It's a very long list, by the way. Show notes and past episodes can be found at twit.tv/AAA. There you can start with episode one. And remember Android week after week with each episode, almost 400 total episodes, which I kind of can't believe. And you can watch us live every Tuesday starting at 5 p.m. Pacific at twit.tv/live. Thanks to Alex for putting out fires in the studio as well today. Really appreciate it. And thanks to you for watching. We'll see y'all next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye.